So joining me somewhere at a junction in cyberspace is James Yarker from Stan's CAF. James, welcome.
Thanks, James. Nice to be here, wherever we are.
It's good to have you on. Now, some folks will have heard of Stan's CAF because it's a kind of a name that I think intrigues and entices with equal measure. But essentially, Stan's CAF is a theatre company that I guess kind of dabbles in film and live art as well.
Yes, I think it's an unusual name for an unusual theatre company, I suppose. Principally, we do stage shows in theatres, but we really pursue interesting ideas wherever they take us. And sometimes they take us out of theatres and into art galleries or public spaces. And we also do quite a lot of work in schools as well.
So there's a bit of, I guess, creative education as well. Is that what you want to call it that?
Yeah, we call it, yeah, creative learning. Collaborating with head teachers really on working out how we can help improve students' experiences at school by using some artistic ideas to help them learn.
And like most folks, I think, sort of in arts and culture organisations across the West Midlands and across wider and across the world, really, you've kind of had to have a serious sort of rethink in terms of some of the things that you were planning to do at this point in the year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Really, everything's up in the air. Yeah, and I think especially for a theatre company, obviously, you have a lot of your stock in trade is being in a room with an audience, communing, making stuff happen in each other's presence. And so it comes as a bit of a jolt when told you're not allowed to do that.
And so initially, how did you respond to that challenge? Because I think we're even now still in a situation where theatres, as in big building theatres, can't really open for live performance. It's slightly different, I guess, for sort of community-focused organisations, but the principle's still there. It's still sort of distancing overalls, I think.
Absolutely. And although we've got various performances, which due to their weirdness means that audiences can sort of perform for themselves in intriguing ways, or we do, there's a one-on-one show we've got where we perform through a little window. So actually that would be the perfect social distancing theatre show. Theatres are just really struggling to work out how to do it, and the legal side of it, and then lack of money and all of that. So we just had a look at our programme of work to see what we could do that wasn't taking stuff out of our archive, that we'd film some live shows and share that with an audience. What could we do that responded specifically to this moment and this situation that we're in?
And you've launched, excitingly, you've launched a kind of new season of, I suppose, linked and kind of themed events and project entitled Stan's Internet CAF. It's CAF and not cafe, is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. So not pretentious, good value for money. We called the company Stan's CAF because the time we decided to do it, we were having a big fry-up in a CAF. Remember the days of the internet CAF? It sort of made sense to take that as a name. So yeah, we've got three different projects coming up. And the first one is an extension of a thing we've been doing for a while called The Commentators, which is very much a radio thing. We created these two characters. We staged a 24-hour Scalextrics race back in 2009. And to turn it into a work of art, we did a commentary on it. So the full 24 hours, me and Craig from the company, we did a radio commentary of the Scalextrics race, which we sent out on the early days of internet radio. And to our astonishment, people really loved the commentators. We thought that we'd drive people nuts, but actually they seemed to really enjoy it. So we started to get appointments to commentate on other things that weren't sport. We've done all sorts. The last major thing we did was Birmingham Royal Ballet. We commentated on the Nutcracker for the radio. We're regulars at the Moseley Folk Festival, where we commentate on everything that's going on at the festival. So we thought we would commentate on some famous films. So we commentate in real time. Tomorrow it's going to be Dirty Dancing. So you can either watch the film with our commentary, like they do, you know, when they have football, where you can watch the TV, but with the radio commentary. It's like an audio description meets the test match, I suppose.
Now, I'm glad you started with the commentators, because I guess a lot of people would probably know Stan's CAF through those two characters. And I've certainly seen the two of you out and about at different places. So, for example, I've seen you in the Jewellery Quarter, I think, at their festival. Yeah. I've seen you a number of school fates hiding and lurking at the back, and you kind of got, I guess, the vibe is very much, I guess, John Motson, isn't it? Is that the kind of is that fair to say? Is he the sort of the role model in some ways?
Yeah. You know, sort of... If it goes wrong, it starts to sound a bit Alan Partridge, but the idea is it's sort of John Motson does the test match. So, you know, in the test match, because the action isn't quite so dynamic, they go off on little side routes and speculations and then have to come back to the action. So we picked some films that we think that people will know a bit. So lots of people know Dirty Dancing, they know Psycho, they know Back to the Future. So they'll have those films in their mind.
And those, I think, are fairly sort of contemporary references. But another part of the season takes on something that I think is about 400 years old. The Anatomy of Melancholy, which sounds very dramatic.
James, I love this. Honestly, it's the best thing ever. It has been described as the best book ever written. Is it Dr. Johnson, I think, said, it's the only thing that makes me get up 2 hours before I actually want to get up to read it. So yes, it sounds quite intimidating because it's 400 years old, it's 1500 pages long, and it's a book about melancholy, which you could very roughly translate as depression, but it's sort of broader than that. But it's amazing. It's written almost in the time of Shakespeare. The language isn't as difficult as Shakespeare, but it's just unusual. It's got a really lovely texture to it. And it's full of speculations as to what might make us melancholy. And some of them sound quite sensible to us now. And some of them sound nuts because 400 years ago, the understanding of the world has changed so much. It's all done in this very lovely sort of good-humoured way. It's very, very organised. So it sets out the definitions and the symptoms and the prognosis and then suggestions for the cures of them. We were challenged by a festival director who said to us, "Stanscaff, you're the only company in the world I could imagine adapting my favourite book for the stage." And it turned out to be this monstrous book. I was really disappointed when I got home and looked it up. After putting it off for about a decade, we finally thought, we should do this thing the guy challenged us to do. It's really lovely. It's written, the guy, Robert Burton, who wrote it, said that he was writing it to help other people, but also to help himself as a cure for melancholy. It's just amazing how apt so much of it is. And the advice, some of it's crazy, which is like take the earwax of a dog and rub it on your teeth, which no one's going to do in their right mind, and I'm sure wouldn't work. But
don't think you get a prescription for that sort of thing.
No, but lots of it is also sort of really sensible. Chat to some friends, go for a little walk in the fresh air, and you know, get things in perspective, and don't worry too much about other people. And it's really lovely. It's really beautiful. And we did it for the stage, and then someone said, "Have you thought of adapting that again for, I don't know, a podcast or something like that?" So when we got told that we couldn't go out, we remembered that, and we turned it into 35. Little films, and the original cast have come back together, and each film is about 3 minutes long and takes on a slightly different aspect of the book, and the performers are in little quadrants. So we've taken the classic Zoom format and we've just overlaid a little picture frame on it, so we don't all feel like we're back in Zoom hell. And the actors perform it in their own rooms, in their own homes, which gives it this really beautiful intimacy.
Now, one of the other pieces that you're launching as part of the new series for Stan's Internet Cafe, I think it's really interesting in the sense that what you're playing with here is the sort of interactions that never are. There's something here that plays on, I guess, the things that get lost in translation perhaps sometimes, and you know, kind of how we connect to other people. You know, you drift into a radio phone in or something and you kind of sometimes only get half the story. But this is something that focuses on, I guess, call centres and sort of people's responses.
So we were trying to think, because we're being forced to work in this way, it seems ridiculous to try and do Romeo and Juliet or something like that that really isn't written for this format. So we started to ask ourselves, what would the format suggest in terms of content? And I started to think about all those interactions that we have through our lives nowadays, where we're trying to get stuff sorted out by phone. And so we've no idea really where this other person is, although often there's a regional accent that makes you think you're in the northeast or you're in, their voice is out there. So you phone to try and get some help or sort out some problem. And you have these brief little relationships that are part scripted, but also have a slight this sort of friend, you know, they're as friendly as you might want to make them, and they're fleeting and sometimes they're frustrating. And I was thinking about the people at the other end of the line. What's it like to have one of those jobs?
And what's great about those kind of things, I think, is people are either startled, i.e. that someone answers so quickly, or they're at the end of the half hour to 45 minute wait, you know, for all the world's problems to be solved by one person. So they're really sort of, you know, literally hanging on the phone, kind of waiting for the heartache to disappear. Or they're very angry sometimes. I mean, slightly different calls you get sometimes trying to sell you things or inappropriately get information for you. So there's a whole mix of kind of how people filter or react to those kind of
Absolutely.
Calls. So.
And because we're the nature of Slanscaf, we don't do existing plays. It's very rare that I actually sit down and write a play. So we're going to be making this with our cast and taking in their ideas and experiences and views on all this. So it's yet to be made. So I'm a bit nervous about it.
A work in progress.
Yeah, well, not even that yet. An idea about to be in progress. But no, we're really excited. And it's good. It means you get other people's perspectives on the world.
So that leads quite nicely to my kind of the last question I was going to ask you, which was, I suppose, and I've asked a lot of people this, and they don't always know, to be honest, to be fair. And I guess lockdown has been a curious period, and we're still sort of in that period. And, you know, we may be just drifting into a different phase of it. But how do you think it's sort of affected you creatively? Because you mentioned a number of sort of practical things that you've had to adapt and a number of different productions that have spun out of it. But longer term, what do you think how's it going to impact you in terms of how you write or think about writing?
That's a big question, isn't it? I think we're very flexible. So we really respond to opportunities and restrictions. So often, I don't know if you remember back to school, occasionally you'd be asked to write a story about something and they wouldn't tell you what the title needed to be and they wouldn't tell you how long it needed to be, and those were the worst essays to ever write. It's much better to be told it must be exactly 150 words and it must be about the beetle, and okay, I can do that. And so being given restrictions sometimes helps you be creative. So I think there'll be an extent to which that will happen for Slanscaf, and we're already seeing the fruits of that. The big question, I suppose, is who's going to be out there wanting this stuff? Are there still going to be theatres with the money or the will to do this? Will people get very, very conservative and want something they know and trust and love? Or will they just be voraciously wanting anything new and exciting and want to explore the world afresh?
It's kind of exciting and frightening, isn't it? It's that kind of situation.
It's the waiting I can't stand. We're all planning, aren't we, for all these different possible future worlds. So.
While folks listening are trying to think about how they plot some of those future worlds, well, importantly, where should they be going at the moment to find out about all these wonderful things that Slanscaf is conjuring up?
The very easiest thing to do is to go to the Slanscaf website, which if you Google Slanscaf Theatre, it'll come up. Other search engines are available. But slanscaf.co.uk also gets you there. Things are being streamed and put up on YouTube, etc., etc.
Excellent. I want to talk about accessing some of the stuff online, because it's all free to access, but importantly, yep, there's an element of donation and perhaps charities that you're supporting.
If people fancy contributing, we don't want to take any money off it, but there are people in a much worse plight than us. So we're supporting a charity that supports theatre makers who are less fortunate than us. Lots of freelancers are suffering really, really badly at the moment. And also our local food and charity. I think it's the Ladywood Project.
Excellent. Well, I for one will be checking out what Slanscaf are going to be up to online in the next few months. But until I get to that, James, thanks so much for coming on and talking to me.
Thanks, James. Great pleasure. Thank you.